Fozzy Football Radio is back. And it's been a couple of years, and in those couple of years, the one thing that my partner Giuliano would want to say is, we told you so with regards to the Italian national football team. We told you everything was going to happen, so we didn't need to be recording for the past couple of years. But we're back, and the focus is Canadian soccer with our great friend Dave Simpson. Dave, thank you so much for joining us once again.
No worries, man. Always here for you.
So we're going to basically pick up where we left off with the Canadian national team. So, Dave, just a quick refresher. Just for a refresher for our listeners, it was a couple of years back. It was just when John Herdman came on and Zambrano was on his way out. We didn't agree with the decision.
Right.
And we basically had a lot of needs improving things to do with Canadian soccer. And since then, Canada qualified for Qatar. Very proud of them. Showed up, and I thought it was a positive performance, albeit. And just when you think we take a step forward onto 2026, where we're co-hosting with the States and Mexico, we take two steps back, or even a few more steps back. John Herdman leaving, going to bigger and better things with Toronto FC. He's doing a wonderful job there. So what I said about John Herdman in that podcast, he's proven me wrong. So he was way above expectations for me. And I think he's doing a wonderful job with Toronto FC. He's actually getting Lorenzo Insigne to actually do something, which is a shock. But so, Dave, how do you feel about where we've gone with Canadian soccer from qualifying for Qatar and having that performance to where we are today?
Well, first I got to apologize to John Herdman too, because I actually didn't really know his name. Like, I knew who he was, but I didn't really delve into it. I was kind of upset at the hire. I liken the national team to a relationship with someone who is addicted to drugs, in that you know what you're getting into, and then there's these strives of abstinence and, you know, like doing well and, you know, I'm 60 days sober or off the whatever I'm addicted to. So you're happy for that, but they're not where they need to be. And then, unfortunately, you know, they relapse. But you love them. So you keep supporting them. you know, you love them and you want them to do well. And sometimes you see that you're... you want it more than they do. And then you're in this tug of war relationship of feelings versus reality. And I think, I mean, we're talking again, and I feel as though if I would have recorded, if I were to put what we recorded last time against what we're going to probably say today, there's so many similarities, and it's been years. And this goes back even to when I was a player and people before me. I think what we feel is, I told you so and nothing's changed, even though so much has changed. I was so taken back by us making the World Cup in the way in which we did it. First of all, number one, scoring goals has never been a thing that came easy to us. That was our struggle for the most part. Well, technically our struggle was the defense and offense, but nonetheless, the fact that we were able to score as many goals as we did, and David scoring as much as he did, and Laren, and everyone that was there was of quality, which I just found that fascinating, because that has not really been the case in the past, playing on levels that most Canadian national teams, you know, didn't play on, in terms of the type of players that they had and the opportunities that they had. So when I saw them qualify, there was a sense, like I was speaking to Tam Nasaliwa in an interview, and I just said, there's a bittersweet feeling to it, because there's so many people that had to go through the muck in order to get them to that point. And then now that they're going through what they're going through now, I feel as though they're starting to feel what we've been saying we felt, in that disappointment of, it's not about the hard work, it's always about the organization and their ability to, unfortunately, mess things up. When I saw them play, first of all, the first game, I was very proud of them, right, against Belgium. It was phenomenal just seeing them, you know, do so well. I felt like every Canadian that was a supporter of Canadian football felt like they were wearing the jersey that night. They felt like Canadians playing against Belgium. It felt like that's kind of like what I see Canadian football kind of looking like a little bit. Like, it's a little, like we're a little bit unorthodox because we're not European. And we didn't try to buy into that. You know, we played our style, and we had, the only thing that was just bothering me was that the opportunities that we missed was just, oh, please, just put one away. Please, we need this. And they just like, just keep missing. I remember the Morocco one, I felt more out the game in the Morocco one than I did the Croatian one. You know, just, they just, it just seemed as though they were just, I don't know if this is politically correct, but they were, it just felt like they were men and we were boys a little bit. You know, just physically, just the way how they were just doing things at will, it felt not as good as the first game. I remember that. And then the Croatian, when everybody was nervous because we thought we were going to be smacked around and embarrassed. And I felt as though we did quite well until they scored. And then things kind of went downhill from there. But overall, the defense, you know, let us down. And poor Atiba Hutchinson running around like he's a 20-year-old in the middle of the park, giving his all. He was probably the standout player for Canada, and he was the oldest one. And that's saying something, right? So overall, I thought, you know, the qualification to the World Cup was just such an amazing moment for Canadian football supporters, you know, and then getting there and actually see them walk out and hear the national anthem. I don't think that any of those guys understand how much it means to so many of us who did not know if that would ever happen. And then to represent pretty well, you know, I think that the highlight of the whole World Cup was Julian. He said when they were speaking about the Canadian Federation and speaking openly and honestly on TV is such a rare thing. And I that was my takeaway. It was just like, these guys did the best that they could with what they were given based on the fact they weren't giving much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so that was my overall feel, you know, about the entirety of the World Cup and the process leading up to it.
So we go to the World Cup. Then now John Herdman leaves, goes to Toronto FC.
Mm-hmm.
And there's now expectations for this men's team to perform.
Under the worst circumstances.
Yes.
And you got to look at why John Herdman left.
What do you feel would be the reason why John Herdman left?
Because the same thing happens. You know, he recognized that his passion for the game was being superseded by business. And how can he be successful? It's the same reason why Brazilian coaches always leave. Can't get any better than this. Gotta go. So, and John Herdman saw the writing on the wall. He was frustrated. You could see it in his press conferences. You know, he spoke about it openly. He knew that he was leaving. At some point, I think he either was going to get fired or he was going to leave out of frustration. He wanted to have more hands-on. You can see what he's doing with TFC. He said it, you know, in his press conference for TFC that he wanted to have a chance to work with the young people and grow talent rather than see them, you know, once every 4 months or something like that in some ridiculous environment last minute before a friendly match, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the motive operandi is for Canadian football. I'm not sure how we bastardized it. I feel as though business just cares about business. That goes a long way in many things in life. We just care about the money. And if we can put some fans in there and they can have some fun, that's great. But as long as we make enough money to keep the fans, you know, we can keep the fans coming in somehow and make enough money, then that's all that we care about. And I think that's reflective on the situation that Canadian soccer is in. There's enough flack and feedback for them to make changes, but they choose. And when I say Canadian soccer, I mean the people that run it, the ones mm-hmm. that have the control of the funds for Canada. It doesn't seem like they care, does it? Like, I don't know. If they do, I would love to hear that their explanation, because there's enough stink for them to come out and have a press conference and straighten everybody up on the facts of the matter. But I don't think I've heard that yet.
No,
you know, by name, I don't think I know any of them really. I think that there's still some fear of some power. Now, me saying that, I probably will get in hot water, you know, about what I'm saying concerning the players and the national team, because sometimes I think I have some affiliation with some of the people that are in that, and they probably won't like me, and I probably. be blackballed from helping certain situations. But that's the situation, man. I think that John Herdman kind of saw the writing on the wall, knew that things would be getting worse before they would get better. And he did his job. You know, he got them there. And I kind of pushed back on the whole point of us being in the World Cup. We were going to be in the World Cup regardless. So, you know, like, if we didn't make last World Cup, we would have made this one because we're the host. So it's, I don't think it's always about being in the World Cup as a, you know, as a goal. I think it should be, regardless of how stupid it is, winning it. Like, you know, there's a difference. I remember a coach telling me there's a difference between playing to win and playing not to lose. And I think that there might have been a struggle in some of those games in the World Cup in terms of playing not to, to lose. I could see the expression on Atiba's face. He believed. And there were some that were just kind of looked a little bit shell-shocked, right? A little panicked. And I think that that goes for all Canadians. I think sometimes we settle for less because we're playing not to lose. We're just happy that we're there, right? And so our decisions, I think, reflect that.
No, absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that. That being said, how do you feel about, how do you feel, well, I know how you feel about the business model, but how can you say it's a business model and making money when the new, I forget his name, but who just came into Canadian soccer saying we're running with a $4 million deficit? So how are we, how is this a good business model for them and making money if we're still running $4 million in debt?
I'm not mistaken. I think I heard somebody say something. We're going to start fundraising. That's... I've never heard of this before. This is all new.
Right? No.
This is all new to me. Look, sometimes you gotta restart. I heard the word bankruptcy being thrown around. If that gets us out of the contract with these guys, we got to do it. I probably will do it right after the World Cup. Well, why not? Because it's not going to get any better until 2037, is it? Right. So what's the point? Right. I mean, if they're not going to willingly capitulate and change some things and, you know, so that Canada soccer actually makes money, then all this is just blah, blah, blah garbage that we've heard before, you know, and I think everybody is pretty tired of it at this point. I think when people stop believing in a system that's supposed to be for them, then the system fails. And I think that when all we hear is that Canada is doing well, winning games, and they have no money, and the players aren't making money, and there's no money for the infrastructure, and there's nothing. And then there's these people that signed a contract someone in Canada signed a contract with these guys, and now they have all these rights and they make all this money. Power is power. Like, you know, like, what do you do when the government wants to do something and you say no? Nothing. Like, you can't vote these guys out, right? So what's the point? You know, we could talk all we want. And I hear the lingo. I listened to the interview and I was like, what is he really saying then? Like, or are we going to ask for them to do something? Because a contract is a contract, right? I don't know what the future is, really, you know? So when people say bankruptcy, people, like, get scared. And I'm thinking, it's a restart. Like, start all over again and fire some people. It's time to clean house, start all over again. There's been even the last time that we spoke, I said, there's been some of the same guys that were my Ontario team coach is still there. I don't know what it takes. You know, we're very polite here in Canada, you know, and that's one of the great features that we have of this country. And unfortunately, I think that that's proven us to be too complacent with a lot of things that that shouldn't happen. So yeah, I think that that's the situation with the Canadian football. Is like once we get to a point where people disbelieve, then, you know, these guys are going to lose money, and maybe that might impact them. Maybe it won't. Maybe they made the money that they need after the World Cup. Like, I've heard rumors.
Okay, what rumors have you heard?
Now, if this comes true, then it's not a rumor, but it's serious. I'm not, this part, you know, I'm smiling, but I'm saying it just because I need to make sure that I protect the integrity of what I'm saying here, and maybe the person that told me. But I heard rumors that there's a bit of a chance that after the World Cup is over, that the Canadian Premier League is gone too. Now,
really?
Because there's a lot of money that's being thrown around by FIFA in order to prepare for the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And making the Canadian Premier League, there's a lot that comes with that. After the World Cup, what's left for Canada? So it's just something to think about. Like, you know, you're going to have to qualify for the next World Cup, and probably won't be a World Cup here for a long time. It's a shot, one, you know, it's an opportunity of a lifetime. and business wise, I think that there may be incentive, you know, to stick around until after the World Cup, and then after that, then you can have Canada soccer back. Now it's just a rumor. You know what? It's not even a rumor. It's just a thought.
Yeah, that'd be absolutely devastating. Yeah, devastating. Because I mean, I think we're getting there with the Premier League. I mean, we're slowly. I mean, they're expanding. So I know Vancouver's just come in this season, and they have like some new ownership. I know York United's got new ownership with the owners that bought. They're from Mexico, obviously, but they're bringing up some talent there. Like I thought there's a huge uprising for the Canadian Premier League. I thought we're maybe 5-10 years away from actually doing something
if it's run properly. But you know, when you're trying to get players in, so I've given an example. One of the top goal scorers was a guy named Taha, played in League One maybe about 2 years ago or so. He was not chosen. He went on trial, and the feedback that we got through various sources is that he was too old at the age of 24 at the time, or 20.
What?
So the mandate is to play guys that are around 20, between 18 to 21. So if you're not that age, there's a high chance that you're not going to be picked from League One. So what this is, in many cases, is not about the best talent, which we were talking about last time, that the players that know how to play should be playing. I don't want to go and see a glorified U17 league just because, you know, you want to hopefully find the next Alphonso Davies and make a lot of money off of his transfer or residuals of a transfer. You know, we want to see good football. We want to see the best footballers play. And, you know, if a good footballer who might not be the greatest for Europe is really good for the league, or, you know, or a player that is experienced that still can play, that person shouldn't ride the bench or not be allowed just because of his age, just because of a business incentive or a business strategy. Like, not all 21-year-olds are good. There are a lot of players that that mature over time. And to have that as something that's passed down through League One is ridiculous. I don't know. Does Italy do that? Do you know that Italy? Are you sure you didn't check Serie B and C and D and A and see if maybe they have a U21 policy or something like that? They don't do that?
The Serie C, the third division, has a couple of U23 teams. Like Juve under 23 is in Serie C. They can't move up past Serie B if they get there, but they have a couple of senior players on that team that are older than a U23, but that club's mandate is to play U23. More so with Italy, they have to have there's like 5 international spots in the starting 11. So if you don't have an EU passport, you're considered an international designation. There's no age restriction on it.
Okay, yeah, but that's a team, not a league.
But the league is the same way. The Serie C, Serie B, Serie right. A, same way. Like,
okay, so we're talking about a league which just wants basically young players. And I guess the idea is that we're grooming them to make the national team. I think that's what it is. Again, I wish that we would look at paths that have worked. If we're striving to be the U.S., then we suck. We are Canadians. We don't need to be like the U.S. We need demotion, promotion, which thank God they're starting to do now with League One. They have the top tiers. You know, we need that, right? Like we need outside influence in order to make this league viable. I said last time, I remember what I said a little bit, and I sounded crazy, and they're making me sound even crazier. But I believe that Canada, because Canada is such a nice place to live, nice people in general, crime is not as much as other places, yada yada, that we should be, in a perfect world, one of the best leagues in the world, because we have so much multicultural influences in just Ontario, never mind the strong French legacy that is here in Canada. And look what France has done. Like, we don't have an excuse. Us following patterns of North American football leagues, I think, is a huge mistake. I think that we need to put it out there and allow real clubs to come in and invest in a way in which they can actually make money. Now, I'm speaking behind the scenes stuff that I know. I know that that's not, that a lot of them don't come in and invest because they can't make money, because all the money is shared between the owners.
Yes.
Well, all the money is shared between the owners in Europe. Real Madrid sharing with Barcelona?
No.
Why not? Sounds like a great plan.
they're on the brink of bankruptcy, but it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. The ownership sharing. I agree with you 110%. I've been a big stickler for this. You need promotion, relegation. The European model works. Like, that's what it doesn't just work in Europe. It works in Africa. It works in Asia. It works in South America as well. There's no ownership share. Like, there's no revenue sharing amongst owners at all. Like, there's an incentive. You want to make money, get to the Premier League of your country, and then you're going to be making money. You want to make more money, get into the domestic or the international or like the CONCACAF, UEFA Champions League, get into those cups and make the additional money. It's incentive for those clubs to do well. Yes, you have those clubs that struggle for money, but then they adopt a different model. Like, you look at Manchester City, an endless amount of money, but their mandate is win at all costs. And then you have teams, you have clubs like Burnley, for example. Burnley will float between the Championship and the EPL League, but predominantly their mandate is, let's bring in some young English guys or get some kids from the academy, because we're not at a win at all costs kind of business model. We can't afford that. And let's develop them and sell them until we can actually do something.
At a time when people will be most interested in the Canadian market because of the World Cup and it being, you know, a highlight, I think that this is when you would want to get all the investment. Right? You would want to open up the doors and have clubs want to have a share or, you know, a corporation or something of that nature with Canadian talent. As I said, like, Canadian talent should be free. We should be free. We should be, all the talent should be free, free transfers, you know, and residuals is what we would get paid. You know, like, I just feel like if all of that, if you think about it, just think about it, all the advertising, everything for this World Cup is going to one small group of people. I can't even tell you how much money is being swindled just based off the fact that that thing has been signed. It's perfect timing too. Perfect timing, like perfect timing, right?
Yeah.
As soon as, like, just perfect timing, we finally get something good going, and then this is the good that we get.
It's disappointing.
Yeah, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer all the time and just talk negative and stuff. I'm so proud of our people, girl side, guy side. But the reality is that it robs me of the joy, because I know that these guys are struggling. Like, private donors were helping out with the national team.
See, that's crazy.
I've never heard. Have you heard of this stuff before?
No, like, every other association that I know of, they take care of their players. Hands down, they take care of their players. You got to go to a friendly. Yep, you're coming to Coverciano in Italy. We're all flying out together. Everything's taken care of. You don't have to worry about it. Show up to training.
Oh my gosh, you ain't making no national team unless you're playing for Vancouver, Montreal, or Toronto FC. All right, so that's not happening now. Or you're not playing for any U20, like, you're not playing for anything unless you play for one of those academies.
It's a joke.
No one has adopted that ever that I know of.
No.
Every con, like, when I'm talking about con is in the team. And you know, Zinedine Zidane was passed on many times, but he came up through different teams. It wasn't like, okay, you got to play for Lyon. Oh, no, you have to play for Marseille, or else. You played well. Somebody saw you. They said, that's a good player. And because you made the team, now you move up to somewhere else. We have, oh man, it's a masterpiece. I believe it's like a web of, it's just a masterpiece where only certain people get to eat. It's just so beautiful how they've done it. From the Canadian Premier League down into League One, we own League One, we own the Premier League. Oh, by the way, the people that own the Premier League and League One, they also own the national team rights. Oh, it's just what they've done is, it's business genius. The question that I have is, how are they able to do it?
Nobody asked the questions here.
How did that happen? How did we sign that agreement? Who was in control? And what are their names? Like, if we're pissed off, they got to start naming names. I think people are still afraid. I think that there's a lot on the line. There's a lot of hands that have been shucking. And I just feel like people are afraid. Canada needs to win. Canada needs someone who cares. There's too many of us who have sacrificed and gone through really hard times in order for other people to have a chance. And for that chance now, for all that hard work to culminate and then to be robbed of the opportunity is a very sad event indeed. So I'll leave it there. I don't want to be Debbie Downer. I'm going to try to be more positive.
You care. That's why we're talking about this, is you care.
I care about people. I care about the talent. To this day, so it's been like 3 years since we recorded our last one, that where I've been on. And can you still tell me the pathway of how to get to the Canadian Premier League again?
Couldn't tell you.
What's the qualification for getting there? And who's the one that chooses you? We still having open trials? We're still doing that? Not there's who's what's the scouting system? Like, how does that work? Okay, well, then how is the player going to know? Well, should I go to USL? Should I go to OPDL? Should I go for League One? Would you scout me if I'm a good player and I'm in the lower tier of League One under the top 10 teams now? Would you get me from there? Nobody knows. There's a specific team who felt like, because of the demographics of where the team was located, that they would pick a certain ethnic group in order to bring fans. I'm not going to say the team name, but that's the situation. I'm trying to find the positive. There's huge positives, and I'm not one that would make up positives, right? I just want to speak to the fact of how frustrating it is, I think, even for Canadians to know that you're going to play in League One. What's the plan, right? Like talking to Julian, I said, Julian, I hope that Simcoe becomes the Real Madrid of or Barcelona of the League One, because we need a champion. We need to be behind a team that just wins every year, and hopefully qualifies to the CONCACAF Champions League, and shows that you could come to this team and go straight to Europe. You can come to this team and compete on the highest level. We dominate because we're best. We're the best. And that's the reason why you come here. If you're serious about football, you come here. Until other teams see that one other team is dominating and they step up to the challenge and compete with them, then I think League One is always going to be this, like, you know, kind of wavering kind of thing. And the Canadian Premier League should be scouting all the players from the best team. So that's how it works normally, right? And I think that might be a good way. But I've begged Julian. I said, Julian, please, like, we need you, and we need Simcoe to be very successful. I said the same thing to Vaughn. I said it to some of the Croatian teams too. Like, just, we need you guys to step up and to dominate, you know, until it filters down to the teams that really need to be here, and the teams that are just here because they wanted to, you know, to have a license to have a team in League One, right?
Absolutely. Well, Simcoe's doing they're doing some great work, Simcoe, in League One. I mean, they're coming up against Toronto FC in the Voyagers Cup in the Canadian Championship. So, and I know they're trying to get a huge following of, they're trying to get 1,000 supporters down to BMO Field for that game, but I'll definitely be rooting for them in that game because they're coming up against the corporate entity that is Toronto FC.
Yeah.
To me, I'm going to be honest with you, Dave. I think that's the MLSE, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, Toronto FC. That is the business to blame for everything with Canadian soccer. They're the first ones that got in, and they basically had a monopoly, and they had to protect their money. And this is a corporation that only cares about making money. You've seen it in hockey. You've seen it in basketball. You see it in soccer with MLS. All they care about is making money, and that's become the norm. That's what Montreal Impact did. That's what Vancouver Whitecaps have done now because they're part of the picture. I think you're bang on.
Yeah, like, you look at Toronto, right? I mean, man, we've won so many Stanley Cups since 1968. It's just so many that we've won that I just can't even remember a time that we haven't won. You know, we've just won so many in the last 20 to 30 to 40 years that, you know, clearly they're great businessmen. How do you get a team that has never won that has that fan base and sold out for so long to keep coming through the turnstiles and still lose. It's phenomenal to me. They are great business people. But the difference between us and Europe is that we don't wear paper bags over our head and come to the games with green and yellow shirts on when we're mad, right? We're so nice. We're so happy and so uneducated in many cases. The ones that are mad just don't go to the game, but they watch it once in a while. The ones that just want to go to an event show up. So they're still not impacted in any way by you and I not going to the game. You know, they're in their box and they see it. And they just ask, you know, what the TV rights are and how much we made and the viewership. And there you go. It's all about the money, unfortunately. You could win an election. You could win an election in Spain by saying that you're going to buy a player. That's how much they care.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like, I've never seen a football association just run up purely on making money and no questions asked. I've never seen this before. It's mind-boggling, and it's been happening all our life.
Yeah, and I heard, you know, some TV shows talking, you know, on YouTube and that, and they're also to blame a little bit because they don't speak the truth, because they want to make sure they have a job as well. Everybody's kind of in it. We talk about these businessmen being greedy, and I don't blame them. They're just doing their job. They're making money. My problem is that the people that allowed it to happen didn't do their job. You know, if we go into negotiation, I'm going to try to get as much as I can based on what I think I'm valued at, and you're going to try to do the best you can based on the budget and what you think I'm valued at. What was the value of Canada? Very cheap, apparently, because we were able to give up everything for a very long time. I don't think that, I think the person that did the deal thought that they got the better end of the stick because they thought we would never qualify for anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that a lot of people on TV also don't speak as candidly as I think Julian did diplomatically. He was very smart with what he said, and he chose his words very well, but he was very poignant. And when he said that the men's national team do not trust the Canadian business, better can't, whatever that is, CPA, and you know, the higher ups, and neither do the women, and you see it happening, and I'm hearing that you know, the more that we win, the worse it is, because we're perpetuating the cycle, which is give us less, we'll do more.
Yeah, absolutely. So to touch on that a little bit, going back to Qatar, there was some rumblings that were coming out in the media that the players weren't basically given much compensation for getting to Qatar.
Let me tell you something. Let me just tell you what happened there. Because I can tell you something on our side. So we have, I'm not going to plug my business and all that, but what I will say is that there is a gentleman that is associated with our business that runs the German national team. That's their scheduling, where they stay, all their accommodations, you know, all that stuff. We reached out to Canada, and he was willing to do that for them, right? So get all their games, their pitches, and everything. Like, everything would have been sorted out. And we handed to them on a silver platter, number, name, resume, the whole nine, right? And he didn't need to do this, but because he was friendly with us, he was willing to do it on behalf of Canada. They didn't even answer. So the bumpy pitches that you saw them play the pregame at, where people got injured, you know, that ridiculous game that they played right before the World Cup, the places where they stayed, that could have all been avoided. I know that firsthand.
So how do the names or the faces of the Canadian national team, like Alphonso Davies, Jonathan David, Atiba Hutchinson at the time, Stephen Eustachio, how do these guys respond to that?
Behind the scenes.
Just behind the scenes. These are guys playing for elite clubs in Europe where this would never happen, and where they have teammates that play for other national teams that this would never happen, but yet they keep their mouths closed.
Because sometimes you got to ask the question, if I did speak, then what difference would it make? Like, what difference would it actually make to speak out and to be the person to speak out? And I think they have in many different ways, right? They weren't happy. I mean, some of them, didn't they boycott one of the games? When there's like problems, you know, with the government and stuff like that, people usually march on the street, right? Now, if the government cares, then they'll see that as a sign of disapproval, But if the government doesn't care, then what good does marching on the street do? And I think that's kind of the situation, right? If you don't care that we boycotted this game, if you don't care that some of our best players last minute pulled out of the game, then what do you care about? Like, at this time, right, if you were them and they had all the money and the strings and you saw what has been coming out on the women's side and on the men's side, would you not have had a meeting a long time ago to discuss people like Atiba and Julian and Sinclair and all of these higher-ups? Would you not have done that by now? So what would stop them from doing that now? They don't care. And I think we sometimes, we grow up in this world being taught that everybody has the same morals and ethics that we do. But that clearly, from what we see around the world, is not true. There are people that do not believe the same morals and ethics and values that you do. And we struggle with that because we've been conditioned to think that the world goes around based on everybody wanting to do good. But what happens if they're just selfish and they don't care? And if they did care, I would love to know what they care about. But it doesn't seem as though they even feel like they need to speak on it openly. I haven't heard anything through lawyers, maybe, right? But nothing really. And Canada is in such a weird situation too. Like, if every single player in the Canadian Premier League decided we're going to boycott, we're not playing, would it matter?
No, I don't think so.
So, like, that's what I mean by the only person that needs to care are the people that pull the strings. Show us that you care by solving this issue and being fair, not poor. Like, I'm sure you've gotten back the money that you've invested. So why not even the playing field, make people happy, and we'll be like the biggest fans of yours. We'll put plaques on every single, you know, stadium that there is of you. But I don't know. I don't know what to say. No one really does. It just keeps, you know, limping along until the World Cup. And then let's see what happens after that. That's what it seems like.
That basically delves into like my next question, but it feels like you've pretty much answered it in the theory. So I was going to ask you, but basically since John Herdman left, Mauro Biello's come in, a lot of fans have scrutinized him on the way he's managed a team. And there's always a call for, we need a world-class coach, we need a world-class manager. Canada desperately needs that because the talent is here. And I was going to ask you, why can't we get a world-class manager? But I feel like,
why would you want to inherit this mess?
Exactly. Why would you want to inherit this mess where you really don't have a say? They don't care.
Well, the issue is not the play on the field, right? The issue is behind the scenes and it can't be solved. I don't know of anybody that has signed an agreement that where they've been running things the way that things have been run. So why would you want to take on this giant situation? You have great players that you probably want to play with, you know, like play, you know, the coach and to manage. But if they're not happy and they're only showing up for the most essential games, then what are you really, really working with? So I don't know if it was if it's something that people are really wanting to take on. You know, it's a giant situation. I maybe I should do more research and find out if other federations are going through what we're going through so publicly.
Honestly, I haven't heard much about any other federations going through what we're going through.
This is different, right? This is a contract that's been signed and there's no end in sight for the next 12 years. So this is different.
So just for our listeners so they can understand, so this contract is for the higher-ups that basically run the Canadian Soccer Association. Mm-hmm. They have a contract for another 12 years. Can't really do anything about it.
Yeah, like I'll try to summarize it in the best way. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Maybe I don't got my facts right, but this is what I understand. There's a difference between, okay, so there's the difference between the Canadian Soccer Federation or Association, right? And then it seems as though the Canadian Soccer Association signed over the rights to the ones that own the Canadian Premier League. And so the ones that own the Canadian Premier League own all the rights to the national team when it comes to all of their advertising and stuff like that. So the national team players usually are supposed to get paid from the Canadian National Team Association. But because they're not making money, the players can't get paid. The only people that are getting money from the success of Canada is the people that own the Canadian Premier League and League One. That's basically what I understand. And whatever their budget that they set is what we have, we meaning, you know, the Canadian Soccer Association has, you know, outside of league registration and stuff like that. So that's just like a general overall understanding of what it is that I understand. So yeah, it's nuts. And I told you, like, when I was playing, you know, people be taking connecting flights all the time and paying out of their own pocket, some of them, you know, on really bad occasions. Our per diem compared to anywhere else was quite low, but that was because I just assumed it was because we weren't ranked really high. So we would have like these one-off camps and stuff like that. And that wasn't really the case. And I told you before that one time Julian Guzman was making more than the whole national team combined, women, men, and youth.
Wow.
In 1 year. And that's not a knock against Julian. That just says that it was what I think our budget was about 800,000. We couldn't even keep our jerseys. We couldn't keep our we couldn't keep any of our training gear. Like it was bad. It was like a luxury to have all that stuff. No, I don't have all that. I have one.
Do you have the match when you got the cap, or like when you got the international cap?
Yeah,
or?
I got one. And the other guys that played way more than I did probably have a lot more. But I'm just saying that was the situation for a long time. That we would get these flimsy Adidas, you know, look like trainer kit type jerseys, and we. Most of us wouldn't be able to keep it when we went to the camps and stuff. Like it wasn't, I'm just saying that our budget was really low. And for all the kids, I mean, more people are registered to play football, soccer, than anything mm-hmm. else.
Yeah, it's, I looked at a stat. So we have nearly 1 million registered football players in the mm-hmm. country, but yet we only have 1,200 football associations in the actual country. And just to give you a perspective, France, I think, has got 1.8 million football players registered, but then they have 14 or 15,000 football associations that they can develop in and work their way up to the pro leagues. So,
yeah,
that's a huge, huge number. I think England has the most. England's got 40,000 football associations. Wow. And you, yeah, like that you can go to and that basically eventually filter your way up through right. the system. I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy. And we're the thing I don't understand is where do these 1 million, there's more than a million football players in this country that are, I think, that are ready for the next level. I mean, I'll give you an example. I know we talked a bit about it. Like, I'm doing my goalkeeper diploma with Ontario Soccer, Canada Soccer, and on Friday we did our full day, and they brought in two OPDL players, goalkeepers, and ran them through paces, and we were allowed to run them through paces. These two kids are elite. But the question I was going through my head is, these kids are 17 years old. Why aren't they, they're OPDL, but they're no more than that. Why aren't they already in League One? They definitely have what it takes. Why aren't they in the, like, they could possibly challenge for a third spot in the CPL or in an academy, or they could be in an academy in Europe or anywhere else around the world. Why are they still in OPDL?
I think people don't have a lot of direction too. Like when I get calls and stuff from guys that want advice and stuff, they say, should I go to, you know, the OPDL? Should I go to here? Should I go to the MLS next or whatever it's called? And they don't know where to go because they don't know what path to take to get to their goal. For me, it was simple. You know, you excelled on the best team in your age group. The scout would come and take you onto the Ontario team. Then you mm-hmm. go to the national team, and then you were kind of on your own. Hopefully you played well with the national team some way, you know, or you go the US scholarship route. But there was only one league, right? And depending on where you were, if you were in British Columbia or if you were in Alberta, right, you just play on the highest level there, and then you get scouted to the provincial team. Now there's so many leagues, so many academies, you know, that it's very confusing and nobody knows where to go. And guys that want to go to Europe are going to, you know, MLS, you know, lower division leagues. And ultimately, every single Canadian that has a passport should be playing in Canada. And the best ones should be playing in the Canadian Premier League, regardless of your age. I mean, what makes you special as a young talent is that you can play on the level of men. That's the whole point. If the average age is 21, then what are you really proving? You're playing against your own age group.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but again, I'm not sure who's saying this stuff, but I just feel like maybe I'm old. Maybe it's just time for me to move on. Like, maybe I'm not right in my head, or time has passed me by, but I'm getting more confused as I get older. I'm not sure what's going on. Like, a lot of things aren't making a lot of sense. And I wish that I could make it that way. But every time when I check myself and I go, maybe I'm wrong, I realize, nope, I'm not. It still doesn't make any sense. It's not adding up.
So just from your experience, if I were to ask you, so let's say I have these elite players. I have an academy and I have these elite players, and I think they're ready to go to the next level. Given the lack of direction we have here, whether it's to go to League One or CPL or MLS or college or this and that, would you, if you think they're elite, they got what it takes, would you push them into across the Atlantic? Would you say that's the easier way to go, just across the Atlantic, because the systems are more refined?
It depends on where you come from. So I had a player who I thought was really good, and he tried his hand in Croatia. I think it was in the third division, and they didn't get his paperwork right. He went through someone who called themselves an agent. It didn't work out well. And he came back, and now he's at Simcoe. And he was asking me what he should do. I said, sign with them because they're the most professional one. And when I was trying to help him go to Denmark, his CV was pretty poor, right? Because in the time that he was in Croatia, he really didn't play, only exhibition matches. So he basically lost some time, right? So he's regaining that time now. And he said, you know, I told him, I said, in order to make your CV right, you're not going to get a call up. So would you ever consider playing for another national team? And he said, yeah. And so he made his debut for Trinidad.
Wow.
So he wasn't good enough, but he was good enough for Trinidad's national team. By the way, if Trinidad would have put away some of those goals, that would have been a whole different ball game.
Yeah, it would have been game over.
And if this kid was playing, I bet you he would have. That breakaway on the left-hand side, that miss was ridiculous. Took that touch way too far. So my point is that what I tell guys now is, where do you come from? If you can play in your domestic league where you come from or where your parents come from, it's better to go there. Then Canada would recognize you. So I'm going out to come in.
So is that what happened with guys like Jonathan David? Because if I recall, he didn't go through the MLS system at all, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he went to Belgium, right?
I think so, yeah. He went to Belgium, yeah. And Alphonse obviously went through Vancouver. Steven went to, I guess he's gone through the Portuguese system. He's been there forever. Mm-hmm. So
Alphonso Davies, like, you know, let's face it, right? He's an anomaly, right? He's an anomaly. So we can't say that we, like, created him. Like, he's an anomaly. Yes, he went directly. Think about it. As a person that's highly gifted, he went from, what, 13, 14 years old. By 15, he was already on our men's team, like in Vancouver. What is that saying? What is that saying? I don't know of many 15-year-olds that play on the highest level in the world. Do you? Okay, that happened a couple times now. Freddie Adu and Alphonso Davies, they're very, very young. Right? Only in the MLS, baby. Only in America. Right? So it did him well. But my point is that shows the level. Good on him. Right, but that shows the level, and he's shown that he is a quality player. But he also got into Bayern Munich, and when he went to Bayern Munich, he wasn't on the first team. A lot of injuries happened, and he just happened to be a very good player. And then he got his opportunity, and he killed it, and he's still doing it to this day. But there was a transition that needed to happen. So again, when I talk to players, now I ask, because I don't know the pathway. I tried asking like high level people, what's the pathway? And it's all about who they want.
They don't know.
It's all about who they want. And there's no real, you could be a top goal scorer, but if you're too old, if you're 24.
That's crazy. This, it should be about, if you're the best in your pool, you're getting pulled. Who cares what your age is? Who cares what your demographic is? You're Canadian. This is the CPL. We want the best Canadian players playing in here to make it competitive. We have an opportunity because we have spots in the CONCACAF Champions League that they've given to the CPL, thankfully, to get more exposure in the CONCACAF region and in the world region.
See, the thing is, when we look, like when we're assessing these talents, right, and we're about to hand it off to, you know, a high-level club, they don't just look at the player. They look at who they're playing against. So when they see a player take a bad touch and there's no pressure, they go, oh, this is not a good level. They don't just look at the player, oh, he's fast. Oh, he could dribble. Oh, what a good shot. They look at the whole scene. When they ask, they say, can we please get a whole game, please? Can we get the whole scene, please? So the buildup of play. And if the buildup of play is terrible, if the defensive structure is terrible that the player is playing against, or if he's out of position, then they disqualify him because you have some guy that is out of shape and out of tactic, right? Like he's not in the right shape. He's out of position. That's the reason why you scored, right? When the goalie gives up a big rebound for no reason, like when it's just bad, 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 then they disqualify the player as being good. So the league has to be competitive. You need people, not just one or two. Like when you are a young player, if you can make a men's team, that means that you must be good. But if you are a young player playing in a young league, like let's like give award to a kid who made the U17, you know, a team in a U17 league. It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. Like, what are you talking about? The whole league is young. You're going to look like a star, right? But when you go overseas, it's different.
What's the European mindset on Canadian players still? Is it just, these guys are hockey players, or is it, are we starting to be taken a little more seriously as football players?
What they do, the response that I've gotten is the question, why is he not playing? If he's good, why is he not playing in the Canadian Premier League? They don't understand that the Premier League has its own agenda. They don't even understand that they all share the same money. Like when you start explaining this stuff to them, it just decreases the players' chances. because they go, what are you talking about? What do you mean they all share? And then they shut down the conversation. Whatever. Like a lot of times the entry level clubs that a lot of these Canadian talents need to go to, which we spoke about, right? The Swedens, the Denmarks, the Norways, the Nordic countries. They ask the question, okay, Canada is still not looked at as a very good country because again, they don't look at the fact that Canada made the World Cup. They look at what happened in the World Cup and they lost all three games and only scored one goal. That's what they see. If Canada would have kicked up and did great and made it into the knockout round somehow, or even won a game, there would be more interest. But as they expected, if Canada makes it, they're going to get destroyed. And in their mind, that's what happened. For us, we're happy that we made it. For them, they don't care that we made it. They cared what happened when we made it. And we met all their expectations. So they asked me, if this player is good, why is he not in the Canadian Premier League? And I have to tell them, the Canadian Premier League is the top division, but doesn't necessarily mean that they have the top players. What are you talking about? How's that possible? I don't know how that's possible. You have to trust me. We don't trust you. We trust statistics. We're going off the Canadian Premier League, and these are the players that we want, and there's very little of them. So what happens if the players go from League One and hopefully go on trial somewhere and hopefully make it? And most times they have terrible experiences because they have to go in bed with people who are dishonest because they're desperate.
It's so frustrating to hear that.
Yeah.
So basically the CPL is inhibiting players that are basically not there just because of the way they choose players they don't choose necessarily the best ones, and then the best ones kind of get the best ones that are not there.
All right, this is what I want you to do, because you know people take my word for it and they go, no, he's bitter because whatever, let's look at what he did, he's not that, whatever, you say whatever you want, okay, cool. All right, let's just take an example then. Issei Nakajima Farhan was a national team player. Somebody that's listening to me, pull up his highlights in Malaysia. Pull up Issei Nakajima Farhan, right? It wasn't that long ago. I think he retired in 2019, 2020. Pull up his highlights in Malaysia. And the next year he played in Pacific FC, I believe. And he rode the bench. Now, look at his highlights, and you tell me 1 year later that he should be riding the bench. And he was told, you know that we're going to have to play the young players. And so he barely played.
That's so frustrating, yeah. Dave.
That's just an example. I'm just giving you an example so nobody says David's saying it. Right? Like,
there's a bunch of them. What are these foreign... That's where I go now. Like, what do these foreign owners think then of the CPL? Like, Atleti Ottawa has that affiliation with Atletico Madrid. York United is now Mexican owned. Like, we have some foreign buyers that they know how a system works professionally in football in their country. What could they possibly think about the CPL then? Why is there this buy-in for them? Is it there just as a revenue stream for them, or do they want to get the best players and bring them over to their clubs?
I have no idea. I can't really answer the question, to be honest. You know, if I could, I mean, it can't be that they can get the best players, because most of the players are free at the end of the season anyway. So why would they buy the club to get the players? Just wait until the end of the season and then just take them.
Pretty much. Like, it's, I honestly, that's the one thing that kind of frustrates me with the CPL structure when it comes to player wage. I think it's they have a $1 million operating budget. You can't feel the team like that. Nobody can make a living.
I mean,
off
no,
that.
Like, you can. Like, you can compare our budget to the fourth division, maybe the fifth division of Germany in Oberliga. It's around 400,000.
Okay.
You know, and they have fans and stuff. It's about the way that we market. And are we open to other marketing ideas rather than the ones that are in our little incubation? Like, you know, like, or are we only? Look, man. The people that run it have to answer those questions. What we know is that it's not working.
No, it's not. But clearly, we're not the only ones that can see that. There's a lot of other people out there that can see that.
Well, it depends on what we're seeing. Maybe you and I are very wrong. Maybe there's a chance that we're completely wrong. And what we're looking at is what we care about, and they're looking about. Look, they're looking at what they care about. We don't know what checks they're bringing in.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of CPL games. I've seen kids on the, and no disrespect to the CPL players that are there, but I've seen some kids just on the field that are more talented than some of them that are in the CPL.
Yeah, but that's because you care about what's on the field.
Yeah, of course I do, because I want Canada to do well.
Yeah, and Toronto Maple Leafs cares about what's on the ice. Well, they bring in a big market player, right? Sell a lot of tickets, then don't make the play. Then the same thing happens, right?
But that's the thing that you see with CPL, like the pricing structure. Like, they're trying to fill the stadiums. They really are. Like, you can see, like, you know, the tickets are a lot less in price than MLS. You think they wouldn't want
to? The price of the tickets has much to do with what they're offering. If I'm the best singer in the world, my ticket ain't going to be cheap. All right, so.
But wouldn't they want to fill the stadium?
Well, how, though? Like, how do you do that?
You got to bring in the best players.
Yeah.
You got to be attractive. You got to play an attractive style.
Well, what's the one thing that Canada is known for? Multiculturalism, right?
Yeah.
How can we fail? How can we possibly fail? The Croatians don't believe in the Canadian Premier League. The Portuguese don't care about the Canadian Premier League. The Brazilians don't care. The Spanish don't care. The Yugoslavians don't care. The Italians definitely don't care. None of those. No, but guess what you could do, though? If you really wanted this to work, you'd make sure that you place the team somewhere where the Italians are and let the Italians run it like Italians.
Yeah, you're right.
Light up Woodbridge, mostly Italian, with like Italian roots. And I guarantee you, the pride will be there. Like, I'm not saying that we should nationalize everything and that we should hate each other and all that stuff. What I'm saying is that the reason why we fail is because people don't believe. And there's a reason why people don't believe, and there's a long track record of the reason why. And what our previous discussion is, the reason why people are like, yep, still the same. Every time they check in, they go, how's Canada doing? Oh, I heard this. Oh, okay. Same thing. The people that care are not really the ones that are in charge, unfortunately. Julian de Guzman's and all the guys that you named before care. You could see it. You could almost see Atiba crying after those games. You would think that somebody would be happy that they just, you know, barely lost to Belgium and all those great Tebow was pissed, and he knew that it was this close to winning. He wanted to win. He didn't want to just be there. He wanted to win. And people like that are the ones that should be in charge. And they're not.
I agree with you.
So the thing is, like, you it's not just the players on the field that need to want to win. Like, you could see some of these owners in Europe when they lose, man. They're vicious.
They're pissed.
They care because it's their investment. They're not sharing revenue. They're losing you. Yeah, it's coming out of their pocket, right? That's not the case.
People need to know that we know there are people out there that have these thoughts, and it's okay to say it. It's okay to be objective.
I want people to hear both sides in this. I want to talk to the players for a second. Just, we're all over the place, but I just want to talk to the players for a bit. And hopefully, you know, when this thing comes together, that they hear the negative and then they hear the positive. Guys, you are very unique when you play. A lot of you, the good one in League One, all over League One, and in the Canadian Premier League, some of you guys that make it to the Canadian Premier League, you're still good. The problem is that you are never exposed to what good is to know if you're good or not. But you are, up until a certain time. The time that you stop believing is the time that you're no longer valuable. You start training weird. You don't play the game the same. You care that the coach, you know, who doesn't know how to assess talent is right. The thing about being professional is not about where you play. It's about who you are. You're either a professional or not. For those that aren't playing on the best team right now, that has nothing to do with how much you run, weight room stuff, technical stuff, shooting on your own, all that stuff. Everyone has a chance to prove everyone wrong if they apply themselves and if they are professional off the field. All that I said about the Canadian Premier League, all that I said about League One means nothing when you are good. When you are very good and you are professional, you will find your way. Most times, you will find your way. Somebody will pick you up and drop you in one of those ridiculous countries that don't make sense. And because you're good and because you're professional and because they care about winning, you will play. And when you play, somebody will like you because you're good and because you're a professional, and they will bring you to the best team of that crappy country. And then now you're playing on the best team of that crappy country against a good team, and they see you and they're going to want you because you're good and because you're a professional. And then you're going to go to that good team. Then you're going to get paid. The problem with us is that we want the system to help us, but we already know the system doesn't. So what do? You make your own way. That's what you do. And when the national team comes a calling, you look at your passports and you go, which one do I want to play for? And then you make your decision. Because until our national team and until our national system and all that, and when I say national system, I just mean Canada soccer altogether, cares about their players, why should the players care about the Canadian system? We're not talking about Canada. We're talking about the system.
Very, very well said. I think that's very inspiring to all the players out there that are listening. And I think every player playing in the system needs to hear that.
And I'm going to go a little bit further. I want you guys I'm going to give you a roadmap. You want a roadmap. This is what you're going to do. There are some countries where Canada, because they did make the World Cup, is valuable, or they're willing to take a look at you. So this is what you do if you don't have a great CV and you're a good player and you're a professional good player at a young age or any other age. This is what you do. If you come from Armenia or Lebanon or wherever it is, just the lower end, not lower end, but when it comes to like national teams, if you know that your national team is not good, name another one. Do you have one?
Okay, let's talk like Estonia.
Yeah. If your parents come from those type of countries, right? You can make their national team by playing in League One. You need to reach out, get your passport, and you need to start reaching out to the U23s, the U20s, the U17s, because if you look at your national team and your national team has all local players playing in your country, that's a team that you can make. They play local games. They don't have a budget, so they're going to bring local talent. And if you're willing to pay your own ticket, you might be able to get yourself a shot at your national team. They don't, because the thing is that, here's the funny part. They don't know what League One is, so they assume that League One is the top league. And they don't care that you're 17, 18 years old and not playing in the Canadian Premier League, because usually 17, 18 year olds don't play in the top league anywhere in the world. So they're going to assume that you're right where you need to be. So in ways, you could kind of trick them into believing that you're, you know, the best, and you might be. And in that way, you can get on the national team. And once you're on the national team, you become valuable to agents. You can become valuable to teams in that country, and you just play in Estonia and go play in Armenia. Play in the top division of your home country, if you can, right? And if your parents know people and stuff like that, you know, and that's what you do. Until people recognize, you do the best that you can. And you know that those leagues, though they might not have money and the fields might be crappy, guess what? Their stadiums are better than ours, even though they're like ancient and falling apart and nobody's in them. And sometimes they are in them, who knows? But it's still a better system than the system that we currently have right now.
Absolutely.
That's what I would do.
Very well said. I think that's the perfect advice.
It's sad, isn't it?
That's the perfect advice. No, it is. Canada
is still exporting talent to other countries to develop them for them. It hasn't changed.
But we're so far away from getting to where we want to be.
I think that we're on the doorstep and a mile away at the same time. We're at the doorstep because we do have an established league. We just need to let the doors open a little bit and let real players play. Older ones that are 29, 28, 27, 26, 25 that can... Look, how about this? How about we do this? The best players play. If the younger ones are better, they push the older ones out. Goals would be different.
Mm-hmm.
And young people get to learn from people who are more seasoned that can teach them. A lot of times you can't be taught while you're on the field. Sometimes you got to be off the field to see it for yourself. And recognize that there's levels to this. And it's not just about your athletic ability. And a lot of times, because we value speed and dribbling and all that stuff so much, we value the athleticism over anything else. But if you look at the greatest players that have ever played, a lot of them weren't athletic at other sports. They weren't like major athletes. They were footballers, buddy. Footballers. What makes Messi and Ronaldo different isn't the success that they've had. It's that Messi was born with it and Ronaldo worked hard for it. And yeah, they both have value. But one guy just stretches for 5 minutes, kicks the ball around, and is ready to put people on their seat. And the other one trains like a vicious animal. They both get the same results, though. And we should be opening up the door to all of them, right? Not just Sudan, you know, 6'2", you know, for a long time, look uncoordinated and everything. But we wouldn't even have a Sudan to talk about if he lived in today's society, because he would never make the team. We say, oh, yeah, of course he would. No, he wouldn't, because he wasn't the fastest. And he didn't look the part. There's a lot of, like Del Piero. You think he would make today's game? You think that people would see him? Short guy, not the fastest guy. You really think so? Like, no, the things that we value, yes, but these other guys, no, absolutely not. Unless you're fast, you're not making it here, right? So I think it has a lot to do with, I think the situation we're dealing with has a lot to do with the eyes that are seeing these guys. And it, like, man, it somebody said, it's not about who you love, it's who loves you and who loves you the most. And if you can get love from another place and they can build you up, yeah, sure. Be like Jonathan de Guzman, not play for Canada, play for Holland. Because they look what he did. Look what they did for him.
Yeah, they did a lot. They nurtured that talent.
Yep.
Nurtured it, developed it. Same can be said for a lot of the Canadian-born players that have played for other countries,
and
right?
I believe that we are not going to a better future, because I believe that the young ones watching today who are on social media and really like Tejan Buchanan, and like Kone, and like all these guys, are seeing how they're being treated. And when they come from Jamaica, and when they come from other places in the world, they're going to say, there's no way in heck that I'm going to play for Canada. I'm going to play for Jamaica. I'm going to play for these other guys. You think Canadians were just, like, born here? They got choices, man.
Very well said. So on that note, I'm going to thank you very much for being here. Can't thank you enough for doing this. We definitely have to do this again very, very, very soon.